All right. Welcome, everyone, to the February 15th, 2022 Verifiable Credentials API call. Our agenda is here. On the agenda today, we've got agenda review, introductions, relevant community updates, followed by trying to improve explanations for exchanges, so PR, we'll take a look at that. Multi-base transaction identifiers, another PR to address some requests that Ori had last time. And then Mahmoud brought up a good question last time around workflow discovery. Mike Varley noted that Secure Key also had concerns around basically protocol interoperability. If we're saying that there are these other protocols that you can kind of speak across VC API, how do we make sure that we keep interoperability tight with those kinds of extensibility options? And then any other issue processing as time allows. Let's go ahead and get started. But before we start, are there any updates or changes to the agenda? Anything anyone wants changed or added? All right, then let's go to introductions and any relevant community updates. Do we have anyone new on the call today?
Manu, this is Andy Miller from IMS. I'm not new on the call, but I don't think I've introduced myself before. I'm a standards architect at IMS Global.
Awesome. Wonderful to have you here, Andy. That's great. What's the interest? Is it just kind of personal interest, or is there IMS Global interest, or?
IMS Global interest. We have digital credentials, which we are now, we've had for quite a while, actually, starting with open badges that were verifiable credential-like, you know, sort of based on sort of early talks about verifiable credentials. And we're in the process now of updating them to be compliant with the verifiable credentials data model.
Wonderful. That's great, Andy. And in my expectation, knowing IMS Global's work, is that, you know, issuing, holding, verifying these credentials using APIs is probably something that all of you are concerned, you know, just are interested in and concerned about and want to make sure happens the right way.
Yeah.
So great to have you here. Welcome to the call.
Thanks.
Anyone else new? I think everyone else on here has maybe introduced themselves. All right. Then let's move on to relevant community updates. Any relevant community updates that we should know about specifically relevant to the VC API work? All right. If not, let's go ahead and move into the first topic. The first one up here is a PR. Let me get the link. 261. And PR 261 is about moving the non-normative text. So we had a section around workflows. Let me go ahead and share my screen here. We had a non-normative section around workflows. We had a section around workflows, and during the last two calls, we were able to converge the workflow APIs and the kind of presentation APIs that the traceability folks were using. We now have two unified APIs or two endpoints that are unified now, which is great. Great progress. But there was some content in the workflows section, this explanation. So let me go ahead and get a preview of this thing. That kind of talked about what the exchange would look like. Apologies, the image isn't going to show up because the preview tool doesn't show images. But the idea here was that we wanted to kind of explain what a protocol flow would look like using the data that was posted to the HTTP endpoints. And we have that now. I've gone through and updated all of the text to the new exchange language that we decided to use until something better comes along. And so that's all this pull request does, is it just moves that non-normative text from the workflow section to this section and then renames it to exchanges. Any questions, concerns about this PR? I think we've got multiple positive reviews on it. It can probably be merged in after the call unless there are any objections. Okay. If that's good, then we'll go ahead and merge that in after the call. The next item up was the multibase encoded transaction identifiers. So let me get a quick link for this channel. Okay, so this is PR 258. And PR 258 basically, let's see, it adds a, so I think on the last call, Ori suggested that, what happened? Ori suggested that one, we pull this out and make it a parameter, path parameter. So that was done. And then there was, I think, Mike Prorock, you said you'd be okay with it being, having other ways of expressing the identifier. So we started out with UUID. I know DigitalBazaar tends to like multibase encoded values. But I think that there was just a general concept that this thing is like a 128-bit identifier, and we might want to express it as different encodings, UUID and then multibase encoded things. So that's all this PR does. Ori, I think we had a discussion about what transaction ID could be used for here, so we might want to touch on that a bit. And then I know that Marcus and Mike Varley, both of you, provided some concerns about, like, well, why can't it be a little broader? So let me pause there. Ori, would you like to kind of articulate your concerns over this PR first?
I mean, I don't have any concerns regarding merging the PR. I approve the pull request. I have comments on the PR, but I don't have any concerns with merging it as is.
Okay. Do you want to voice those comments now, or do you want to?
Only if there's questions regarding them.
I mean, I don't have any questions, I don't think. I do think that it hasn't ended yet. I think most of the questions, Ori, kind of shifted to like the domain challenge and what to do with it.
Yeah, which is, again, probably not well addressed on this particular pull request. So I think conversation will continue on the pull request as long as it remains open, but concrete change requests or approvals should happen to the pull request and its current change set, and we should, you know, probably limit our discussion on pull requests to the changes suggested and open issues if there's another, you know, topic. We want to keep the conversation focused on the changes that are suggested, not conversations about the entire ecosystem.
Okay, I'm good with that. Mike Varley, you're on the queue.
Yeah, so I raised a concern on this one just because on the last call I heard an unanswered question from Brian as to why we were at the time. I think last week it was just focused on UUID, and now it's been expanded to something else. So I want to make it clear that I'm not opposed to having a clear definition of what the transaction ID should be. We should just wrap in logic for making that choice, or decision process for making that choice, so that it's clear to people coming to the API why that decision is made and is the way it is. So it's more of an opportunity for those who might have a reason to have a different type of transaction ID or have different plans for this transaction ID that don't currently fit in within the multi-base encoding or the UUID format. But it's an open window as far as I'm concerned, but I'm ready to close it and say, you know, we've decided on this format for a session ID for the following good reasons, or you articulated them with your OWASP, you know, input validation post. So I'm good. Anybody else?
Okay, thanks, Mike. Marcus, you're up.
It's pretty much the same from me. I don't feel strongly about it, so I'm also fine leaving it the way it is. I just thought that if a transaction ID is supposed to be opaque to the client, right, it doesn't mean anything to a client, and on the server side, different implementations may use that in different ways. Sometimes it might be a UUID, sometimes it may be a sequential number, and sometimes the server-side implementation may use that transaction identifier to encode state in the identifier itself, right, in some kind of format that we may not yet be aware of. And, but I also understood Ori's comments about potential attack vectors that this opens up. So I also just wanted to articulate this as a comment without really having a strong opinion either way.
Okay. I mean, this is good. This is useful to get down in the transcription and so that we can refer to it later. I think what we're saying is presently the only number, you know, the only thing that we seem to be considering is just a UUID or some 128-bit value to identify the transaction ID. It's meaningful for the server, potentially. Not necessarily, it's not meaningful at all to the client. It's opaque to the client. And what we're trying to do is we're not trying to create kind of an arbitrary field where you can just encode just about anything in it. We're saying for now, we are very specifically restricting it to different representations of 128-bit numbers. And in the future, if we find a use case or a reason for kind of the allowable alphabet to be larger or more diverse, we can open that up later on. So we're starting very strict and very narrow. And in the future, if we find out that there's other reasons to make it less narrow, we can open up the aperture at that point. Does that feel like a logical stance for us to take at this point? And then we'll see what happens later on. Actually, would anyone object to that effectively being articulated in the spec as an explanation for why transaction ID is the way it is? Okay, no objections. I will take an action. Wanted to articulate why transaction ID is an expression of a 128-bit number that is meaningful to the server but opaque to the client, and how we might open the range of values later. Okay, I'll take that action. So that probably means that this one is ready to be merged, unless there are any last-minute objections to it. Okay. I will merge that after the call. And I did, Mike ProRock and Ori, I did see the support for doing live merging. I'm just not doing it because I get distracted when the merge fails because there's some kind of merge conflict. So once I get over that, I'm happy to do live merging, on the call. Discovery of workflows, exchanges, and services. Okay. This was the point that Mahmoud raised last week. There is an issue for it, issue 259. And if we pull up issue 259, Mahmoud, maybe you would like to give us an intro here and then Mike, your thoughts as well.
Yeah. So, this came out of our thinking when we were talking about workflows being defined entities where they tell you the scope of the exchange. Basically, if you have a workflow that is supposed to be a credential refresh, it would be nice to know the general scope of, you know, you are expected to do XYZ steps or something along those lines, right? If that's defined somewhere, then it would be nice to know if this particular implementation of the VC API supports that workflow or it doesn't, right? And so what this issue is raising is it's saying we need a way to know what are the workflows that are supported by this specific instance of the VC API.
Got it. Thanks, Mahmoud. Mike Farley.
Yeah, so I agree that this kind of discovery is going to be very important for the open world approach when a client wallet holder application is communicating with one of these servers around exchanges. How is it supposed to know what to do? In other protocols, when you have too much open world or interpretation, it can actually lead to a lack of interoperability, because, you know, a very specific parameter, you know, is required by the server, but, you know, the client doesn't support it, even though they think they're speaking the same, you know, message structure. So, I think, this particular proposal on how a, client can find out what the endpoints mean, and maybe those are spec names, as I think I illustrated there, or maybe they're YAML files. But then a client should be able to recognize those strings and say, yes, I know what that is head to toe, or no, I don't. So I won't call that endpoint. And then I think this PR is also important to get in, so we can also go to the next level in describing what those, you know, strings actually point to, how they actually mean, and how a client is supposed to understand, you know, what do I do to need to support that protocol? So discovery is a very important topic for that open world where we don't want to just leave it too free for all. We want to give the client clear guidance on how to implement, a protocol that it has discovered. And this is the right start, I think, for doing that work. And I guess we have workflows here, but I don't know if that should be exchanges, but that's kind of a side comment.
Got it. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, they're exchanges now, but that's a minor thing. All good points. Mike ProRock.
Yeah, I kind of concur here, and I think obviously exchanges, workflows, whatever the language is, and I can say the use case that I envision, like a particular scenario that we're looking at right now and supporting to a degree is user built interfaces on top of some of our APIs and things like that, right? So if you're saying, hey, let me get a list of all the exchanges that I potentially support, and in our case, those are defined using, you know, business process management, you know, definitions, they could just get that list and then query each one specifically so that they could put an appropriate UI or integrate it into existing tools for BPMN. And so it's the kind of thing that I think is a natural next extension, As we've noted with a lot of the kind of getters, you know, that we've talked about where appropriate, right? Whenever you have a collection of stuff, you kind of want to be able to get that collection or at least the list of that collection to be able to get specific items out of that, right? Once you get the ID you care about.
Yep. Right. So I think these are all good points. I'm gonna kind of argue at it from the other side, only just to try to see if any of this resonates. I'm totally fine with us defining this and putting it in the spec and trying it out. There are like the sniff test, at least to me, kind of smells a bit like soap and a bit like Hydra, which tend to be fairly kind of like, how do you define generic discoverability, right? How do you express this stuff in a way that allows a smart client to come along and figure out how it can interact with the HTTP endpoints? So that's my only concern. Noting also that like many of the discovery conversations we've had before have not really resulted in at least some of us doing discovery. I totally, you know, there's like the, you know, the did endpoints thing that folks are using on that does discovery. So I'm just raising the question of like, who exactly is going to use this and for what use case? So that's the first question. The second kind of note is that, for example, with credential refresh, the discovery mechanism is in the verifiable credential itself. You issue a verifiable credential, you give it to someone, and they discover what the exchange endpoint is for credential refresh in the verifiable credential itself. So it's not it's not done through a get to the server. It's a piece of data that you get and you carry around with you. So that's another approach for, you know, discovery, that I know we're going to be, it's going to be implemented, right? So I'm wondering who's got the use cases that are going to do a get here and then provide, I guess, something to the user. How does that work? I'm not following how that works. Go ahead, Mike.
Thanks. So I wanted to echo your let's not reinvent soap comment, Wisdell. I think that's an excellent example of where discovery got, you know, almost out of control, and clients had to be, you know, so deeply developed in order to accommodate all the open world, you know, API discovery that it became just kind of quite difficult. So the suggestion here is not to absolutely not reinvent that. Let's stay away from that. The use case is, I think there needs to be some context around the exchange ID. For example, I have credential refresh in that example. That's just a string. I could say credential refresh or credential refresher or credential refresh 2. What protocol is the client expected to engage with at that endpoint? And to your point, in the credential itself for credential refresh, I think with service endpoints and, you know, there's a type field, I think we are close to having a mechanism for communicating how, you know, a client is supposed to communicate to that, you know, URL path. But I think it should be tightly controlled in that way, so that it doesn't become just, you know, an open world discovery. So, and maybe, you know, I do have a YAML file there. The expectation is not necessarily that the client is going to build a compliant, you know, API on the fly, but it should at least recognize the string and as a developer, you'd know where to go find the spec related to how to actually communicate with this endpoint. And I'll just point out that I think I've seen a couple variations on this endpoint already in different PRs, and I apologize, I don't have them, you know, at my fingertips. One of them is where within the VPR language, there's a way to present a verifiable presentation, and then get back a continuation method with more information on how to continue. But then I also saw, maybe I'd like to do a post and provide some parameters to that post, which kicks off a VPR request and so on. And that's where, the hair on the back of my neck kind of stood up going, this is becoming more complicated than just simply something we can handle in VPR. And if that's what we want to do, we just need some way of indicating to clients, if you're going to call this endpoint that I've called, foo, this is what I mean, and this is the spec that I'm talking about, and as a developer, you can go and find it if your client throws an error. That's my thinking path.
Got it. Interesting. So to compare contrast, I feel like the next step for this is a PR, right? I think we should be, it'll be much easier to talk about this with a PR. Who's going to write the PR, and what do you need to know from the group to write that PR?
Maybe I'm jumping the queue. I could write the PR for this endpoint, possibly for what you would do when discovering, slash exchanges slash credential refresh. I don't know. What I need for the group. Maybe just throw eggs at what you see, and we can go from there.
Okay. No, I mean that's all we need. Action, Mike Varley, to create a PR to address issue 259. Group will review PR after it is raised. Okay, awesome. Thank you, Mike. I wanted to touch on something. Make sure the queue's empty. I wanted to touch on something you said, Mike, which I thought was really interesting that I did not get from your comment here. Verifiable presentation request. In the VP request spec, we have these new interaction types. So if you wanted to bootstrap into another protocol, you can do that there, right? So the idea here is that in the VPR, when you get back a query, a verifiable presentation request, you get back one or more ways to interact. So this is very much inspired by GNAP. I'm wondering, Mike, do you mean that the types could basically be these kinds of types, but listed here?
I think so. Okay. I think that's what I mean.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's really interesting. Like, that's definitely another way to do it. Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Now keep in mind though, I think you said you wanted them to be simple strings. In some of these cases, like this DIDCOM messaging one, I tried to pick something straight out of the specs, for DIDCOM. And you may need more complex objects in there. But I mean, I think that's just something for the group to explore, right? Once the PR is there. Justin, you're on the queue. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Manu. So, Dmitry Zagdulin, presented, this part of the VC API proposal to the GNAP working group a few weeks ago. And I've started a thread on the GNAP mailing list, linking to the archive page in the chat right now. Hopefully that makes it into the transcript. But we're trying to start a discussion on what this type of model would actually look like. So if you actually click on the third of the long web sequence diagram URLs, that should bring up a picture. Yeah. So the idea here that I think that this work and the work that Dmitry described is there a way to use an actual piece of the GNAP protocol itself inside of another protocol? Now, normally, GNAP is designed as a separate security and interaction management layer, a delegation protocol. But this does raise an interesting question, because this and other use case and a couple of other use cases that have been brought up started to talk about this this notion of, well, I'm off doing another API and I don't want to have to throw on all of the brakes and go start a brand new conversation with an authorization server, because I already have all of the context that I need to kind of kick this off. So how can I kick it off and how can I get it back? There hasn't been a lot of discussion on the Gnat mailing list yet. I would invite everybody to in this group to join that conversation if this is something that is interesting to you. It's not something that I think really warrants a lot of discussion on this call here, but I wanted to make sure people were aware of that.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. Yes, all these links will make it into the minutes. But that's a really interesting, that's a really interesting proposal and thought. In theory, at least with the VPR thing, you can bootstrap into other protocols after every kind of HTTP back and forth that you have with the VCA API. So you could, you know, start off with a mediated presentation and then jump to OIDC credential provider and then jump to GNAP and then jump back to an unmediated presentation thing. Now, that's crazy, right? I have no idea if doing something like that would ever work, but the philosophy and design of what we have right now should allow for it. So I think, you know, the next step there might be someone trying it out and seeing, or at least doing it, you know, thinking through what all of the messages would look like. And if you've got a client that speaks one of these interaction mechanisms as well as GNAP, in theory, you should be able to kind of hopscotch from one protocol to the other and then back to the original protocol.
All right. Thank you, but that is absolutely not the point that I was trying to make. So what you're describing, if you go back to that other thing, and if you click, if you go back one to the email archive and click on the first message, what you're describing, the first of the web sequence diagram URLs, what you're describing is as a much more sort of, you know, traditional way to use these kinds of protocols alongside of each other. And that's so easy to do. It's boring and not worth talking about. So what I was describing is instead a way to use really portions of the GNAP protocol itself embedded inside of a different protocols and have that be defined as a pattern so that every API doesn't come up with its own completely customized version of following that same pattern. So that's, I think, the much more interesting conversation to have because it's, you know, talking to an API and saying, oh, I need you to go do a security protocol that's fully defined. I mean, that's, we know how to do that. We've been doing that for decades. That's what the www authenticate header and basic auth do and have been doing since the early 90s. You know, that's not interesting at all. What I think is more interesting is this notion of, can I kick you into a process partway through with enough context for you to actually do something? And importantly, have a standardized way to get you back.
So, Justin, if I'm understanding that correctly, you're saying there are primitives in GNAP that the VCA API protocol might be able to reuse, primitives and patterns.
Quite possibly, yes. And while I understand that what's proposed in VCA API is not intended to be compatible with GNAP, you know, that syntax is significantly different from what's already been worked out in GNAP, and I think that there might be value in aligning that better.
Okay, cool. What do you need from us to other than just engagement to do some experiments, thought experiments in that area?
Engage with the conversation ideally in the IETF working group to see if there is something that's worth pulling out. And then still the same thing that you had said previously, and that's somebody taking the time and sitting down to see what those messages themselves would actually look like. Like, what would you send back at each step, and what types, and what does that mean for the code paths to the client software that needs to actually deal with these kinds of things?
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, the action then is, you know, someone from the group needs to do that kind of engagement on the GNAP mailing list. Look in, you know, do the thinking around, what common patterns there might be. Yes, if there's interest, as Mike Perock said. Okay. I think, Mike Varley, you have enough to take a shot at a PR there.
Question. Yes, agreed. Okay. Yep, yes, obviously. Awesome.
Okay, great. Okay, so we're through our agenda in 40 minutes. Great job, everyone, for being efficient. Let's take a pause here and see if there are high priority things people feel like we should focus on. Like, there's a huge log jam at X, and we need to clear that log jam. Before I start just randomly going into old issues and picking issues that seem like they would be useful to talk about. Does anyone feel like we really should be focusing on X right now? Mike Prorock, go ahead.
Yeah, I think now once we get these couple of merges in and we see like the basic getter pattern with pagination for like, you know, fetching a, you know, exchange, right, or a list of exchanges, I think we probably need to take a pass and go, okay, what cleanup do we need to do so that a third party looking at this doesn't go, okay, you guys are nuts or you're off base or whatever. Also with the mind of easing, you know, PR 66 that I know impacts GNAP, I know it impacts this, et cetera, and the ability to discuss that over in the VC working group. And so I think the more polished this is with a little more commercial support, the better we're looking for that kind of thing. So that's just kind of like mindful of time, like that core ability that we've discussed here by like merging workflows, right? That covers a lot of, exchanges / workflows, et cetera, right? Making sure this is aligned with what we're doing on the trace side and the system to system use cases. That gets a lot of the core functionality stuff in there that we kind of have to have. And so it gives us a chance to say, okay, now let's focus a little bit on cleanup to try to get this stuff into the actual working group itself, because it all may go away. If it does, frankly, if it doesn't, or if it does get in there, it may still all go away depending on how the working group approaches it. So I don't want to be going in and, making a pile of changes and stuff like that, you know, and just having a, you know, just a huge amount of burn if we know that some of this stuff is subject to adjust significantly. And I think Ted also noted that there's a lot of like old issues and stuff that probably just need some cleanup. So that's my read, honestly, is like, let's try to get this stuff a little bit more polished, professional, and focus on fixing, you know, like PRs to clean stuff up, correct language, fill a gap in API, you know, like an API type definition, et cetera.
All right. Great suggestions. I did want to, and plus one to that. I mean, the reason I'm asking is I'm kind of at a loss as to big rocks we need to move with the API. It feels like at least there's a good core heart of the spec there at this point that addresses, I think, everyone's use cases on the call, at least the major, you know, credential flow use cases and presentation flow use cases. There is one other aspect of this. So yeah, so I think we need to make the spec a bit more pretty. This stuff up here that Joe and Eric, you worked on, I think it would be good to give that another pass and try and clear it up a bit. or just clean it up a bit. And I'm doing a giant hand wave there, Eric. I don't know, you know, what you guys are thinking these days. We don't have conformance classes or terminology sections empty right now. And we have this massively ugly rendering of the JSON schema stuff. So on my, I will take an action to, fix respec OAS renderer to render JSON schema in a more compelling way. So there are ways of displaying this data that doesn't look as awful as it does right now. So we should do that. And then the getter and the pagination stuff, Mike, ProRock is also, you know, would be a good thing to put in there. More examples. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it just feels like, you know, it's cleanup stuff. Not really big. I mean, you know, it's like there's no magic to a pagination, API or how you do pagination. We just need to pick something and go with it. Eric, you were on the queue.
Yeah, just wanted to give a quick, I guess, update from the use cases team. I just finished today a pass at sequence diagrams for the 6 use cases that are currently in the GitHub. And the next steps were going to be to unify that with the diagrams that I believe it was Joe and Mike ProRock did for the VC, for the issuing and verification, just kind of standalone, and kind of out of that then get back to updating these diagrams. So yeah, it's in, there's one branch. Let me get the link for you. In chat.
Thank you. I was failing miserably at that. All right. In which branch? Replace endpoints with diagrams.
Yeah, that's the one. So the index.html has everything. But if you actually click, if you scroll down just a tad and click on the use cases link right there, I currently have it set to display this branch, I believe.
Oh, awesome. Scroll
down, you should be able to see the images of the diagrams.
Yep.
And if you pull those out or open them in a new tab, they should be basically infinitely zoomable. So yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Okay, that's great. So should we put some call time aside to review these, Eric? Or do you feel
I haven't had a chance to go over them with Joe and Juan quite yet. So I think we were going to do that next week. So probably in the next week or two, we'll be asking for some call time.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Okay. And these are great. Thank you very much for continuing to work on these. Awesome. Mike ProRock, you're up.
Yeah. Only note I was going to make is, I think this is a question for the group. I think there is strong value in making sure that if we're doing an open API, specification, that is presented via Swagger, Redoc, you know, something that, you know, or, you know, couldn't take your front end of choice, right? Because that's largely configurable. To be able to go interact with those APIs from the spec itself, right? From the open API spec itself. And largely because that also double checks us on conformance with that stuff and things like that, right? It makes sure that tooling, you know, that the actual tooling that validates that stuff is passing, right? So it's a good sanity check for us. It does not mean that there's not value in possibly rendering some of that stuff in line, right? But I think there's a variety of, you know, ways of attacking that. Like it could potentially simplify the actual, you know, respec side of this where it's like, yep, here's these endpoints we've defined. Here's some example, you know, here's our data types we've defined and allowed, credentials. But as far as like double checking to make sure OAS is actually sane, like there's a right way to do it. And we risk breaking ourselves if we don't do it the right way, right? With,
validation. So.
Yeah, plus one to that. I think there's a strong argument for rendering OAS files in ways that the industry is used to, right? The respec thing is just because we need to, if we're going to do this, need a spec, but that's not what most web developers are used to working with when they're dealing with OAS files, right? So yeah, plus one, we should have a rendering, and right? Like if you go to issuer.html, like there's your rendering, right? And that's live against whatever's in the repo, right?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot that was still in there because I think that was based on, I think the stuff I initially dumped in there, right?
I don't know where it came from. I've just been,
Yeah, I'm good with that. We just may want to make sure that it actually rolls everything up, not just method by method, right? Mm-hmm. So,
Yep. Yeah. So, who wants the action for that?
I can either take the action of compiling a combo unless Ori wants to. He and I argue over what's the better way of rendering that stuff all the time. So if he doesn't volunteer, I'll, fight him for it to make him irritated.
Ori, do you want this? Not volunteering. All right.
You're not getting live testing against multiple servers if you,
I've done it like three or four times now. It was originally the spec was split, then it was combined, then it was split again. I'm not touching it again.
Okay. All right. So Mike B, you're at Mike B to put together a PR for rendering the
Think I did it last time just to get it off the broken version of Swagger that we were on, actually.
Yeah. So let's see. Rendering all the OS files in a way that web developers will understand. All right. And that basically is giving you free rein, Mike, to do what you believe is the best thing to do, and then the group will take a look at it and say yay or nay. Okay. Is there anything else we wanted to cover today? We can let people go 9 minutes early if there's nothing else. All right. I think that's it. We should talk about testing. I know we've touched on testing before, but there are now test suites that are being created that are driven by the VC API. And Ori, that might get a bit to your live testing, like testing against live servers, thing. I know that a few of the implementers are have already set up live implementations of the VC API, whatever we have. And I know that as a community, we want to get to live testing, just nightly testing. Okay. That's it for the call today. Thank you everyone for joining. We will have another call next week. Just as a heads up, I might be 5 to 10 minutes late for that call. So if someone else could start the call, I would appreciate it. I'll send out an agenda on Sunday, this Sunday. Thanks, everyone, for the great call. Again, great progress today. Thank you. We'll chat next week. Bye.